Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Put your knees in the air. Put your knees in the air. Wait, no. Like you're in stirrups.
Okay.
No. Bend your knees. You're not very pliable at all. Well, what the
chair.
Fuck?
Hold on. There we go.
So he comes in, and I'm all spread out. He's like, so, how you been doing? And he's just like, right. No, but he's even
close.
No, but he's like, if you could bend, it would be better.
Hello, and welcome to the Vice Podcast. I'm Rocco Castoro, and I'm here with Johnny Knoxville, who is a degenerate made good through film, and Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa, even though he can't hold his shit together right now. Hi, Johnny.
What the fuck happened to your hand?
I was shooting a promo as Irving Zisman at a frat house in Arizona, and it was a weird night. Someone dosed me with ecstasy. One of the students was like, here, have a sip of beer. And I'd had a bunch of sip of beers. I'm like, I'm good. No, have a sip. I'm like, I'm good. Have a sip, I'm good. She's like, finally, I took a little sip. She's like, take a bigger sip. I'm like.
Oh, it was a female.
Mm.
Did she have an attraction to Irving?
I don't know. If she'd have just told me, I would have taken a huge sip.
Let's back up though. Who is Irving Zisman?
The character I play in Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa. He's an 86-year-old poon hound. And,
So Irving is a character that's appeared, he's in the Jackass universe.
Yeah, we did him first on the TV show. Spike, I think, worked with Tony Gardner before doing the old man makeup in one of his skate videos. Or maybe it was one of his music videos, and he recommended it. So we did it for the show, and we did it in every movie. And Paramount came to us 8 years ago and said, why don't you do it a whole movie with them? And we didn't know how to do it then. But a few years after that, we started talking about if we did do it, how would we do it? And we decided it had to have a narrative, like a loose narrative. And we thought a Paper Moon type narrative would work. You get a kid at a funeral, then you have to take it across country to a family member. And then in 2011, we wrote for a solid year and then took it to the studio because I don't want to agree to something and not have all the bits figured out, because that's too much pressure and that would drive me nuts.
But how was that, how did you write this? Like, because it's a very interesting movie. It's all shot with hidden cameras for the most part. Obviously some scripted elements that are acted, a lot of that's acted, but a lot of times you have strangers, you have marks that are in pranks. How did you go about writing this movie?
We had a loose narrative to begin with. And then we started writing just bits, funny bits we wanted to do in stunts. Because it's all based on, you know, getting reactions from the public. And public pranks are the toughest thing we do. Because you just have to film until you get that right reaction. So like the first two trips in 2012, we got great stuff, but everything wasn't connecting. Like, most of the time I didn't know where I was inside the movie, inside a prank. Like, is this at the beginning, middle, or end? And no one had an answer. No one knew where we were inside the movie. Like, some beats we knew. Like, the biker bar, we knew it was at the end when we handed the kid away. And the funeral was going to be the beginning. But there's so many things, we had no clue where they're going. And it's really tough because we were working story into the pranks. And in November, Spike recommended that we go dark and just work on the story and make every scene connect. And it really helped. We really had somewhere to go in December when we went back to Charlotte for 3 weeks. And we continued playing with it the whole movie, the story, and writing different stunts or pranks until the last day, honestly. And we left a lot of time in the schedule to start screening the movie. About 6 months in, we had, 5-6 months in, we had enough to screen for Friends. And off of that, we saw what was working, and that helped us find direction, too. It was really, I don't know, like an old, 70s experimental film in a lot of ways. When you don't know what you're doing, you know, it's an experiment.
And that's what I meant was, you didn't start when you were writing for that first year with like a traditional screenplay?
Oh, fuck no. We wrote a bunch of bits, and I had a cork board in my office, and they were all tacked. What do you call those things?
Pen? Push pen?
Yeah, whatever, to the board. And we just looked at that all day, and we had a little bit of a story. But in the beginning, we just wanted it to be, we were just focusing on the funny, honestly.
How do you write your pranks?
I don't know. We had the grandfather, grandson, and the characters, and we just thought of funny things to do with them. I don't know. It's a little stupid thing. Like, I was sitting there one day, I'm like, well, I know this is kind of out there, but how if I get my dick stuck in a Coke machine? It makes no sense, you know? But we managed to figure out a way to get it in the movie, and it's one of those things you think no one's going to fall for, but they do. So a lot of stuff, when we pitch ideas, sometimes they don't make any sense, but people, if you're lucky enough, people will fall for it.
It makes sense. There's a hole in the Coke machine.
How does someone's dick get stuck in a Coke machine?
Then how did you think of it? Where did you think of that?
I don't know.
When you were 15, you were like, I got
it. I kind of stopped maturing there. So, yeah, I just thought that would be funny. I didn't know how, but...
What were people's reactions when they thought your dick was stuck in a Coke
machine? Well, we've done it long... Oh,
or Irving's dick.
You mean when I threw it out in the room or when we did it?
No, when you did it, actually, in situation.
People... 100% fell for it. I don't think there's anyone that walked by that didn't think it was going down. Some people walked by and didn't want to deal with it, which you get that a lot, especially with uncomfortable things like someone's gym dog stuck in a soda machine. But it was, and we shot it, we were shooting something else that day, and we had a couple hours before we were moving on to another thing. And a lot of days, we're like, what are we going to do now? And then someone said, well, we have the Coke machine on the truck. We're not very organized. We're semi-organized. Some days, we're really organized. A lot of days, it's a crapshoot.
But just to give people an idea of, there was a ton of work, I think you're downplaying it, that went into this movie, because you had to conceptualize that scene. It was the first scene of the movie, which, to clarify the storyline, at least as I understand it, it's, you know, Irving Zisman, his wife dies, he finds out about it. He decides he's going to go on a cross-country road trip. He gets stuck with his grandson.
My wife dies. I go to a funeral, and I get stuck with the kid at the funeral.
Yeah.
I have to get him across country, and
you have
to
get him across country.
Yeah. So...
But he's kind of open-ended. He's just looking for...
He just wants a little poontang.
Wherever that is leading
him. Yeah. He wants to take a trip to the Ponderosa, but the little cock block got in the way. Beer is delicious. Beer just tastes better at Vice.
There's this, I don't want to say it's a con man element involved, but you are convincing people of something that's a kind of a false reality. that's a skill. Like, did you have to really hone that more for this movie, or were you already equipped with all those things?
Well, it's not a great thing to be proud of, but I'm pretty good at getting people very hot and bothered and to the brink of punching me, and then I can take them down and then take them up. But that's just from doing it for a long time. And that's really one of the only skills I have, but I make the best use of it possible. And I really had to be careful in this film. Not for me, I'm pretty indifferent when it comes to me, but I got an 8-year-old beside me and people are getting pissed. I have to really gauge how hot they're getting, because sometimes people get a little nuts, and I got to worry about him. And he's a wild card. He'll come out with random shit out of his mouth, and you're like, Jackson, you can't say that. You just can't. You met him.
Yeah, I met him.
He's awesome.
He punched me right in the nuts.
Yes, he will.
And, you know, the whole...
You met the Jackson 5.
The Jackson 5.
Yes.
Where did you find Jackson, who is just a sterling example of a future generation?
And I did a movie with him called Fun Size.
Okay.
And he was 7. And he comes up to me on the set. He's like, I've seen your movies. I'm like, yeah, they're pretty silly. He's like, by silly, you mean stupid? And he just stayed on me the whole fucking movie, hitting me in the zipper, insulting me. When my chair would move, his chair would move.
So did you call him when you like knew that you wanted to have this role in the movie? Did you personally call him and be like, hey Jackson?
I called his dad and mom and said, we're doing this thing. I think he's perfect for it. I knew he's a great actor and he's really cute. The only concern from working with kids before and having them do pranks is sometimes they freeze up around adults doing pranks because adults are going to get angry. And for a little kid, that's scary. But not for this little kid. We did a practice prank with him. We had him pee his pants in this park in front of...
For real? They peed his pants?
Full-grown men. No, we had a little... Okay.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. He would.
I know he would.
But, like, when we do pranks, they're always for real. But this was a kind of a test. And to be able to control it and only do it once, we had 2 people in the office sitting in the park. And they were going to yell at me for not letting him go to the bathroom, and he pisses himself. And we were just seeing how he reacted under pressure. And he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he's an assassin. I'm in love. He is just, he's really... Yeah, like I've never seen a kid like that before. With the spirit amongst the Jackass guys and their connection makes Jackass, kind of special. And I think that Billy and I, Jackson, we had a similar connection. Like you want to hang out with them and you want them to. So that's where it's kind of like Jackass, but the story is just not Jackass.
Has anyone called Billy in the press? I haven't, or sorry, Jackson, son of Jackass yet or anything like that?
No. Surprised. That's a Rip Taylor reference,
right?
I think,
It totally is. I'm surprised no one used it, though.
he's really exceptional.
But it's funny you hit on that, because I see that. There is a lineage there of, like, the kid came up to you and said, your shit's stupid, you know, or whatever. Like,
yeah.
You raised him in a way with these things. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm trying... I mean, his parents are the reason he is the way he is, thank God. And his sister is just like him. She's just as fearless and smart and confident. And I'm trying to pay them to have more kids, because whatever they're doing it right.
I wanted to ask you a bit about Irving in particular, because, you know, it started as... All of you guys on Jackass were kind of being old men, I guess.
Well, we started just with, I think, me doing it, and then I think Spike dressed up as an old man the first time. And then for the movie, we got all the guys dressed up at the end of the movie.
But it was more like, I'm not going to say elderly versions of yourselves, but it was... character there. It was more just like there were old people doing naughty
We
things,
just got
right?
an old man makeup. No right. one actually worked on their character.
But you had to make a character out of Irving.
I didn't really work on... I did a little when I played the old man, but this is the first time I really sat down and really worked on the character. And I knew also knew that I had a, we knew we had a 8-year-old with us in Irving's horn dog, and I can't say explicit things in front of the kid. So my cousin and I, Roger Allen Wade, worked on a dictionary of terms and words that Irving could use that he could say in front, that I could say in front of a kid that as long as he doesn't know what I'm talking about, it's okay. You know, I like to hog wrench that spatuli. What the fuck does that mean? You know, and Billy doesn't know what it means.
Do you have that glossary somewhere?
Yes, yes.
Jim Dong, ham saddle.
No, Jim Dong is something that my friend Nick Parker's mom called it a Jim Dog. And I thought that was so funny.
That's interesting.
And yeah, but no, just like phrases, like different terms for the, you know, boobs, dingle bobbers, and just silly stuff.
And that's interesting that you hit on that because it's a family element to the film. Ooh. Because you have to censor yourself in this theoretical, you know, universe of you and Billy, Irving and Billy. But also, I mean, you have a family now. I believe some of Irving's mannerisms were inspired by your father. Like,
yeah, my father. There's a lot of words and mannerisms from my old man. My father was a huge prankster. He was always fucking with everybody, especially his workers. And I grew up just, I didn't do a lot of pranks, really, because he was the entertainment, you know? Dad was always pulling, like, making his workers X-Lax milkshakes and staging gunfights at the Christmas party with blanks. He owned a tire company, and all these guys like Big George, Big Sam, Ass-Kicking Robert, Super Dick.
Super Dick.
Yeah, they called him SD for short. And the tire groover, when your tires get low, they would get boxcar to regroove tread in them. And then you know, sometimes I get to go over there and re-black them. But his real name was Woodrow Wilson Boxcar Johnson Jr. And he just fucked with him. And his dad wasn't even a senior. He fucked with him constantly. And such characters. And I didn't realize how special my childhood was until, like, I got out to L.A. And no one had any, like, Ass-Kicking Roberts or, you know, boxcars in their childhood, and I was just surrounded by them. It was just normal. And
you would never pull pranks on your dad? Did you ever pull pranks on your dad?
No, absolutely not. He could dish it out, not great at taking it. Yeah. He's the hammer. He'd walk in a room and just take it over. And just really, really funny and just really charismatic. And so I was just in awe.
I mean, I would imagine when your parents or other family members or your friends first saw your, you know, first stuff or whatever it was, Big Brother, et cetera, like they kind of had a reaction of whatever it was.
When my sister came out to L.A., it was around 98, and I had just shot the self-defense test thing for Big Brother where I pepper sprayed, taser gun, stun gunned, and shot myself in the vest with a .38 with a bulletproof vest on. And I was so excited to show my older sister. I was like, she's really going to think this is funny. And I showed her, and she really didn't think it was funny. She was really pissed and hurt and like, why would you do that? And, you know, my mom and dad weren't. No one in my family was psyched. And I understand. I just wasn't thinking, you know, that how they would feel about it. They like the pranks, but they don't like the stunts.
When I was visiting on set, you had a prank where you were trying to ship him in a box at a you know, shipping store, I guess.
How positive was I on that before we went over there?
You thought it was going to be a total tank and just...
I was apologizing to you and Brendan. Look, guys, I'm sorry you're here for this. I wish you were here for something cool.
It was so good, though.
It really worked out. We found two perfect marks.
Let's explain what a mark is first before we get into it.
The marks are the people you prank. That's what we call them.
So you put him in a box and you want to ship him back to...
Raleigh, North Carolina. Well, I'm shipping him to Raleigh, North Carolina, where his father is.
And it's because, I don't think we've clarified this, his mother, your daughter in the movie, Irving's daughter, goes back to jail for
Yes, she's in jail again.
For?
Unspecified charges, but you know it's shady. I'm guessing drugs.
Okay, and so you want to ship the boy to his father.
Well, I was going to drive him.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to drive him, but something bad happened, so now I want to ship him. In the beginning of the story, we needed Irving and Billy not to get along. So when they did get along later in the story, it meant something.
And the first guy, which is not in the movie, that you...
The what?
The first guy working at the shipping store.
He seemed like he was kind of onto it.
Is that the problem? Because I was only watching from the monitor.
Yeah. Okay. When I was in there, I went in to do it, and he seemed like... He was onto it, and so we can't. That didn't work. It happens. Like, it's one of those things. You just gotta keep doing it.
He seemed like he would say okay, and then call the cops after you left.
No. He was just onto it. I think he got it. He thought he knew it was something shady, and so whatever. We did it again.
The technical aspects of this movie were really like just. Very impressive in terms of that you're able to get different sets of marks doing takes, if you will, with them.
Oh, just like when we were doing it in the office and we would have a set of marks come in and then 40 minutes later we have another set of marks come in. Yeah, there's a lot of work that goes into the... You got to really... Everyone's like, why don't you shoot the movie 60 days in a row? Well, you can. You have to shoot it 2 weeks at a time because you have to prep so much.
Too much, yeah.
So,
did you look to any other movies? It's a pretty unique movie in that regard, I feel like, because even people like, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen or Andy Kaufman, it was almost like everyone was reacting to their setup to some regard. I mean, there's definitely like degrees of setup, but I feel like in those movies there weren't, at least in the initial Sacha Baron Cohen movies, there were not like other actors involved. Like, you guys really went to a length to make it very believable for the marks. Did you have to look to any other like filmmakers for that, or did you all come up with it by yourself?
No, we had to figure out that bullshit by ourselves. It was really a stupid idea for us to do in the first place. Like, we're doing a movie that's based on pranks, all on pranks. If we don't get any reactions, we're screwed. We're shooting with an 8-year-old who has limited amount of time that we can work with them. I'm gonna be in makeup 3 hours a day. It was thank God it worked out because thank God we're not very bright because, like, I don't know, that was a lot to take on.
So you've been working with a lot of the same makeup artists, really the same makeup artists the whole time Irving.
Tony Gardner's guys.
And was this process for the movie more evolved? Was it like they really spent more time with it, or has it always been the same?
No, it's always taken about 3 hours, but, you know, from the TV show, I mean, it looked really good on the TV show, but it was a different type of material they were using. I'm getting ready to burp.
Do it.
Excuse me. And it was made of some alginate material. I don't even know what that means, but it was a little thicker, and now it's made of silicone, and it looks like skin and reacts like skin, and it's thinner, so it just looks so much better. You can be very close to me. If you're really close, what you'll notice is the webbing of my eyebrows or the hair, but the makeup's pretty solid. It's really solid. You'll notice the character, you'll recognize the character before you'll notice the makeup. Those guys are great.
And solid enough for you to get very close to people on camera and really not notice.
No. I mean, I get nose to nose with, you know, right in people's faces. And if you keep, like, verbal judoing people, they're not going to focus on the makeup. You know, if you have them dealing with other things.
there's something very endearing about Irving because he's kind of like, it's at that point in his life where he's like, I'm going to die pretty soon.
No,
fuck
no, no.
It.
He doesn't know. He thinks he's going to live. He thinks he, in his mind, he's 40. And he thinks that he looks like he's still 40. And he thinks he can go out and sleep with women like he wanted to when he was 40.
It's almost like, I feel like you might get in this place where it was almost like an apocalyptic setting where you're like, unfiltered, I'm going to say whatever I want because I'm going to die soon. And he's been
Well, he doesn't give a fuck. Old people don't give a fuck because they don't have to.
They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And it should be okay for them not to give a fuck, right?
Sure. They've done their time.
Do whatever they want.
Yeah. Irving doesn't wear rubbers. Why should he?
What's the point?
What's the worst that can happen? Well...
Well, there's bad things, but nothing that's going to kill him sooner than his, degenerating cells. What about sex with old people?
The first porno the second porno I ever saw. The first one was The Poonies with Ginger Lynn, and the second one was Ripples and Wrinkles. And it was a 75-year-old woman with a 20-year-old guy. And I remember, like, he was on his back and she was riding him and they were shooting her from the back and there was these just big saddlebags hanging down and she's having a ball. And then there was, like, a 76, 78-year-old guy, slipping some young girl the butterfinger. Very lovely movie.
Where'd you find such a thing? And
out on Chapman Highway.
Ah.
Yeah, right next to Kmart and Payless Shoes.
Okay, so a store. It wasn't like a Jack Shack where you just picked it up and...
No, it was a video store.
When you were a kid, like, whether you'd be in school or with your friends or something, like, what did you do?
Pretty, you know, like, there was stuff, but mostly just fights and shit, you know?
Fights?
South Knoxville, that was the fun.
When's the last time you were in Knoxville?
When was the last time anyone was in Knoxville?
It's Knoxville, Tennessee.
Question. It's a fair question. I've been violated a lot. When I broke my pee-pee, I would have to go every few months. He would have to put a camera down the head of my gym dog. And he's done it a lot, this guy. Before he got there, the nurse would come in, and I'd have to take off my pants and... put my ass at the end of the table and get up and get up in stirrups with my ass at the end of the table. And she was really sweet, and it was always really cold in the room, and I was really self-conscious. When it's cold in the room and you're laying on your back, it looks really small. And it's not that big anyway. But she would numb it, she was really sweet, and but then the doc would come in, and I'm up in stirrups, all right? And all I have is a little piece of paper over my gym dog, and I'm kind of exposed on the bottom. He comes in, he wants to make small talk. And my knees are up like, here, put your knees in the air. Put your knees in the air. No, like you're in stirrups.
Okay.
No. Bend your knees.
So.
Yeah, up high.
I can't do it.
So, you're not very pliable at all. Well, what the
chair.
Fuck?
Hold on. There we go.
So he comes in, and I'm all spread out. And he's like, so, how you been doing? And he's just like, right. No, but
you
he's even close. No, but he's like, if you could bend, it would be better. Yeah, like that. So he's like, so, how's things been going? And yada, yada, yada. And I'm just sweating.
Why did you care that much?
Because he's like, up, like, personal space invader. I got no clothes on. Maybe I'm a little uptight, but it was weird. It was fucking
weird.
That
was fine. I like that.
You need to do yoga or something, man. You're like...
Apparently. Fuck.
He's not... I mean, right? No. Shit. I had to catheter twice a day for 3.5 years, so... Yeah, so that was not great.
I met your son, whose name is Rocco as well.
Yes, yes.
Your kid's name is Rocco, so I was like, my name's Rocco, and people would say, oh, Rocco, when I was a kid. Like, that's your name. But he's Johnny Knoxville's son, and he's named Rocco. I just feel like people are going to expect him to, like, just bash hammers into the wall and who knows what. Like, how do you stop that from happening?
Well, in hindsight, I wish I had named him Murray from accounting because, like, he's a little excitable. Like, with my girls, I don't have to worry about them. They're smart. Rocco is, he's a little excitable, so I'm going to have to stay on top of him.
Yeah.
Like, he's been in the emergency room a couple of times already.
But you're a daredevil. You're Evel Knievel, right?
Part no, two. No.
Can we Evel talk about
Knievel
your Wikipedia
is
page?
Knievel.
No, I understand that, but at the same time, what I'm saying is, not many people fucking have done shit. It's a lost art, being a daredevil. Is that am I wrong, or is it now just like?
If you just look at any videos, there's a lot of people going for it out there.
That's what I'm saying, but it's you're an actor as well. You're all these things, but. You are a daredevil in a traditional sense. Do you think that is going to happen anymore in 15, 30 years? Like, you know?
Like, we didn't invent stupid shit. You know, people will be doing really dumb stuff from here on. And it's just going to escalate more. And God bless them. You know, it's, I don't know, especially with the internet. The hey, watch this just was taken to a whole other level with the internet.
So you invented YouTube, is what you're saying?
Yes. I invited that. Yeah, that was. It's funny because when we started, there was nothing like that.
What are you doing now? What's next?
We're working on a couple documentaries. I haven't decided like what thing I'm going to do next, but we're doing a documentary on Evel Knievel, and then we're doing another documentary on this guy Nick Piantanita. He was a New Jersey truck driver who tried to break Colonel Joseph Kittiger's free fall record. I think Kittiger broke it Kittiger set it. He wasn't trying to set a record. He was just doing research in 1960. It's a thing that Felix Baumgartner just broke.
Are you an extreme sports junkie?
No. He tried to break it. 4 or 5 years after that, and it cost him his life, and so we're doing a documentary on that.
What do you mean, we? What does that mean?
Dick House.
Dick House is doing a lot of documentaries now.
I don't know a lot. We've done a couple.
Are you going to do another Jackass movie proper?
I don't know. There's no plans to, but there's no plans not to. The Jackass Presents Bad Grandpa, it kind of opened things up where, like, we found out we could do it. Mm-hmm. You know, attach a narrative to something and kind of mix our stuff with a traditional movie. So that's exciting.
Maybe the cast isn't all in this movie, but the same people who have made it throughout, and they have also advised on it. It's a very through Jackass movie.
The Jackass cast isn't in it, but the crew, we've had the same crew and the same writers from the Jackass.
This has been Johnny Knoxville, or Irving, whatever the fuck I should call you at this point.
He's developed a lot of anger
Andy
towards
Kaufman
me during this.
Person. Evel Knievel.
Randy Kaufman. Rocco, thank you for being on the show today. You did a hell of a job. All right, let come on, hug. Good job. See? Huh? See how we wrapped it up?
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.